The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amazing. Welcome back, everybody. It's the afternoon show. Broads and Marcus Hayes kicking it with you here as we enter Labor Day. Can't believe it. We got Eagles football in 6 days, Marcus. Fired up? Well, I know Elliott Short Parks is fired up, and the Elliott Short Parks call the call-in is brought to you by Robin
Thorpe. So who sends his song? Crash Test Dummies?
I don't know what's going on there, but that was fantastic. RobinFord.com. Robin Ford, where cars and trucks are sold cheap, cheap. All right, let's go to ESP. What's up, Elliot?
Man, I was always told it was Marcus that sang that song, but I guess not. I guess it wasn't you that recorded that.
It would have been way better. Yeah. And it's pretty good. It's
true.
A pretty good
That's
song.
That's a good point.
I mean, it does sound like the song from Crash Test Dummies. Remember that song?
Well, I think isn't it a play on Take On Me, or am I wrong about
it?
It
is, no. But the guy singing it sounds like the Crash Test Dummies guy.
Amazing. What a start. Yeah. Anyway, Elliot, let's get into business, shall we? Yesterday, the big bomb heard around the world with Micah Parsons. How do you feel this changes the landscape, everything, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Packers? Just unfolded for me, if you will.
Yeah. So I understand why Dallas is being criticized. You trade a player like Micah Parsons, like, you're going to get criticized. I don't think it's as crazy as a move as everyone else seems to think. Dallas is not a Super Bowl contender this year, and they're probably not going to be a Super Bowl contender until they get a new quarterback. I like Dak Prescott, but he's 32. He's coming off a season-ending hamstring injury. Like, they have major questions, I think, at quarterback. So to get multiple picks back for him and to avoid paying that type of money for a team that's closer to a rebuild than I think being a contender, like, I get it. I know why fans are not happy, but I think from a team-building perspective, I get it. I will also say, from the Eagles' perspective, I would not be happy that Micah Parsons was traded to the Packers. Of course, you play him less times this year, potentially, but he's now on a team that was a direct competitor with you already, and I think now is a much more legit contender, adding him to an already good defense, to an already good team that has playoff experience. I view the Packers now as the biggest threat in the NFC to the Eagles.
Yeah, it's a good news, bad news thing. Absolutely, Elliot. They're going to play them this year at least once, maybe twice if they meet in the postseason. And that postseason meeting, from my perspective, I'm not a huge believer in the Lions. That postseason meeting could be for a Super Bowl berth.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, what you said first, I don't know that Jerry Jones, who made the decision, agrees with you that they need this rebuild, because he just paid the quarterback you ripped and paid the best receiver and traded for a receiver. So your contention is, okay, Dallas can get rid of Micah Parsons because they're not close to winning at all, but do you think that Jerry Jones thinks they're not close to winning at all?
So we'll see. I mean, Jerry Jones said last night that they could use one of these picks to trade for a player right now. And if they do that, then obviously not. Now, we'll see what happens with Dak this year. They have a rookie head coach, and it's a loaded draft next year. So I agree, like, Jerry is not acting like somebody in other moves that isn't going for it. But I don't see how you trade Micah Parsons and not view that. I mean, he's talked about how they could win more with all of the pieces they can get from this. To me, this is a long play. I understand why he's not going to say that publicly, but I think this is about collecting the picks, not paying the money, and realizing, like, there's a lot of holes on that roster. I've started to really dive into their roster, obviously with week one coming up, and they are devoid of talent at a lot of spots. Like, they have great receivers, but their offensive line's not that good. They only really have one good defensive lineman. Their secondary is in shambles. Like, they just don't really have a ton of talent. So, yeah, Micah is awesome, but I think they know, like, they need a lot of players, not just Micah.
Well, that's interesting, because I don't think you trade for George Pickens, and you're going to have to sign him in a year or two, right? I mean, you don't trade for George Pickens.
Didn't they not trade much for Pickens, or am I misremembering? I don't think it was a ton.
It wasn't a ton, but my point being, why get him if you don't think you can win? Why trade anything for him if you don't think you can win? I disagree that Jerry doesn't think they can win and that he doesn't think much of Dak. That's your premise, that he right. has realized, he has come around to the ESP wisdom that Dak sucks.
But yeah, I don't know if that's where he wants to come around to.
I don't think that's true. I just think he got sick of dealing with Micah and he wanted to show everybody who was boss. I've spent a lot of time around Jerry the last 35 years. I am not surprised that he traded Micah Parsons, because Micah Parsons would not bend to his will. And, like, it got to the point where, as with Dak, as with CeeDee, Jerry negotiated Micah Parsons out of his affordability. He couldn't afford to sign Micah Parsons. I think that the three of them would have accounted for more than 50% of the salary cap, which is the first time anybody would have had three players accounting for more than 50% of the salary cap. And to your point, that's just not tenable. You can't add anything when it's that much money.
So maybe, you know, like, maybe the reasoning for it, you could be correct, and I think there's definitely a lot of truth to that. But I guess where I would land on it is, whatever the reasoning was, I think they are going to end up being better off like this, because I do think a rebuild is going to have to come, or they're going to have to collect more pieces, and they're better equipped to do that now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, just because at that age with that type of ceiling, but then you see the 50% thing of the salary cap, you just can't survive that way. So, listen, all I know is the Eagles are going to kick ass on Thursday, and that's what's important. Elliot, with the 53-man roster, there wasn't that much surprising when the news dropped 4 o'clock on Tuesday. What do you make of the Marcus Epps thing and anything from the 53-man initial roster?
Yeah, so I do think they have a major concern at safety. Andrew Mukuba's barely practiced. He didn't even practice the last 2 days. I'm starting to wonder if he'll even be active week one against the Cowboys. Sidney Brown has played a little bit in his career, but he's not played a ton. So I do think everyone agreed they needed a safety. Now, Marcus Epps, I think, raises the floor of that group, but I don't really think he is a ceiling raiser. And if you would have told me over the last 2 weeks, like, if they went out and added a safety, I would hope it would be a better addition than Marcus Epps. Not that Epps is a bad player. I think he is a very solid NFL player. He is coming off an injury, so, you know, we'll see physically where he's at. I think he can be a solid guy, which is potentially better than Mukuba or Sidney Brown are. But I still think they need someone that you can count on to be a higher-level player next to Reed Blankenship. So, yeah, I mean, I think that signing is a fine one for the practice squad. But I think still going into the season, you look at that secondary, and we just talked about George Pickens a ton. Like, that's the problem with their secondary. They'll have someone to cover CeeDee. That's not the concern. The concern is, the Cowboys are going to pick on Adoree Jackson. They are going to try to get that second safety confused and out of position. And that's a problem they're going to run into a lot, but especially over the first month of the season when they play teams with great receivers and they have a secondary that's somewhat being patched together right now.
So, Elliot, I just wrote a column, I think 2 days ago, that posited that the beginning of this season could be a lot like the beginning of last season between the Eagles' lingering injury issues and the familiarity between the quarterback and the receivers who haven't practiced. I'm not a just adds water kind of guy. I think you need reps no matter how well you know a guy. Mm-hmm. And the strength of competition. So where do you think they're going to be after what I consider to be a very, very trying first four games?
Yeah, so I agree with you 100%. I mean, as good as they were last year, they are one Dallas Goedert 61-yard catch away from not being 2-2. Like, they were very close to losing that Saints game. Now, you can flip that and say they almost won the Falcons game, but I think the point is, that first month of the season, you can't win the Super Bowl, but you can definitely lose it. Like, if they drop to 1-3, their season is over. Like, maybe they'll make the playoffs, maybe they'll be a wild card, but they are more than likely not winning the Super Bowl if they start 1-3. So the first month of the season is super important. I'm a big style points guy. Like, I do think there are weeks where you need to win. You need to do more than win. You have to play well. You have to send statements. I don't think the first month is going to be that. I agree. It's going to be probably uglier than people want to see. So I just think they got to go 2-2. If you can go 2-2, you're mostly doing fine. Maybe another team starts 4-0. You have some ground to pick up. You just can't have that one crucial loss or the one crucial play that doesn't go your way, because 1-3 would be really, really hard to recover from.
And for all of people who like to naysay Elliot, No team that has ever started 1-3 won a Super Bowl.
There you go.
Elliot knows everything. Elliot, I got to ask you about Landon Dickerson, because I was stunned when I saw that he was on the practice field. Not I was stunned a day after surgery. He's just walking on the field and whatnot. It makes no sense to me, but what is that all about? Or is it, I don't know, is he still very far away? Do you have any information on that? I was just stunned when I saw him out there practicing.
Yeah, so I think he's going to play on Thursday night against the Cowboys, and probably the best indication of where they feel Landon is was Brett Toth playing pretty much the entire final preseason game, or at least a large amount of snaps in that game. If they thought that was a real shot, he was going to start week one, you would not have seen him out on that field, and certainly not for as much as he was. So being at practice the last 2 days, Landon's been out there. You know, just looking at him, like if I just was watching him practice, you can't tell he's injured. He seems to be good to go. We'll see, you know, once he's out there playing a ton of snaps in a real game, how it holds up. Hopefully he is, you know, feeling better, and this is not like he's pushing an injured leg to try to play, because I think that'd be a little bit silly in the first game of the season, but I do believe he'll be out there.
Yeah, it's astonishing how, I mean, he has to play in some degree of pain every game, considering what happened to him in college in his first year in the NFL, with the, not just like major injuries, but little nagging injuries. If you forensically sort of review him coming in and out of games and things that have happened to him over the last, I guess it'd probably be 8 or 9 years, he just has to be, his pain tolerance has to be superhuman.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we all watch the games, but Marcus, me and you from the press box get to see, like, when he walks off the field, there's lots of times where he walks off and you go, man, he's really dealing with something.
Between
and then he's out there the next
Between him and Kelsey, man. Between him and Kelsey, so, you have your binoculars on them all the time.
Yeah,
on the sideline.
Always looking for the blue medical tent. So right. he's a very, very tough guy, for sure. Now, hopefully this is My concern with leg injuries and linemen that miss time in camp is it's just so hard to fully recover from a leg injury in season. Same with like a hamstring, like the season keeps going, the practices keep coming. So like it's hard to do. So hopefully this isn't something that impacts him all year. But as you said, someone that's used to playing through pain and nagging injuries, at least, or I guess I should say, unfortunately, this is probably something he's used to.
Elliot, thank you so much for your time. And what are you doing for Labor Day weekend? Anything good?
So I'm going to see Oasis tomorrow night.
Oh,
or two nights from now.
Have you always been, now, you know, I've been here for under 2 years now. Have you always been the traveling music guy, or is this a new phase of Elliot's life?
So this is Elliot's wife thing, I would say. Before I met my wife, I was not a big traveler, not a big concert guy, but she loves to do it, so she's constantly just booking dope concerts and cool places to travel. So I follow along. So I'm a lucky guy in that regard.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's awesome.
How many Oasis songs do you know all the words to?
Uh-oh.
I mean, the only two you need to know all the words to, Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova. Like, those are the all-time bangers. Now,
so
I have
what are you
going to
do the rest of the 2 hours?
Yeah, that's two out of maybe 30-something tracks they're going to play.
But those two are going to be banging when they play. So I'm very excited for that.
You go stand in line at the bathroom for the rest of it, right?
That's amazing.
Yep, I'll go buy merch during the rest of the film.
There you go. So, Elliot, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
That's awesome. Hey, you know what I used to do, though, if I ever had to go to concerts back in the day? We did some country concerts. Maybe I wasn't familiar with one of them as much as others. You just practice a week before. You go through the songs. You do the lyrics.com. You do a little practice singing in the car when you're going places.
That's a lot of commitment.
It is.
My wife and I won a silent auction to go to a concert in Atlantic City last year. And so the only thing we were remotely interested in was Bush, right? And, you know, she was kind of a fan when she was in college. I was indifferent then as now. But the lineup was really good. Like Jerry from Alice in Chains, the guitarist from Alice in Chains, who he was there. He was – it was a spectacular show. So some of these, like – retro shows can amazing. Be really good. We've seen Sting twice in the last five
Let
or
me
10
ask
years.
This. I don't know how this came up the other day. I was on the air. We were talking about it. Have you ever done the go to a concert by yourself move?
Jerry Cantrell.
I have done it. And
yeah,
it
well, I used
is...
to work them.
Okay.
I used All to right. work at Syracuse. I worked at the Carrier Dome okay. and like the hot dog and French fry okay. booth. That was like my work study job. So yeah, Bruce.
I thought it was great. I thought it was so much fun going by. I did it once. I would do it again though. I had that. I went to Kendrick Lamar at the Wells Fargo Center. No, I was blessed.
I went to see. Geez, what's the guy's name? Oh, I used to go to concerts all the time by myself when I was on the road traveling. There was a
that's probably a cool move too.
Yeah, there was a. We were in Toronto, and there was a guy playing who I normally never would have gone to see, but I had nothing to do that night. And it was kind of before like StubHub and like really easy. You know, you had to have a physical ticket to get in. And it wasn't that long ago. It was like when the it was when the Sixers lost to the Raptors.
Well, I guess that was what, Kawhi. 18?
Yeah, but whatever the system was, you had to like print out your ticket. So I bought the ticket online. And, like, the internet was spotty and it was international. I had to go to a Kinko's 5 minutes before they closed and get the ticket printed out so they could scan it and I could get in to see, I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody I'd never seen. But I do it all the time.
It's a good move. I thoroughly enjoyed it. All right, 215-592-9494.
Okay. I would never go see Morrissey, but I went to see Morrissey that night. It was kind of surreal.
I think it's a good move.
What was the number again?
I'm pro. 215-592-9494. Let's check in on our Twitter poll. We'll take a couple calls here. Did Kyle Schwarber's 4-home run night move you, or are you too damaged from the Mets? 52% of voters are too damaged. 48 said the game moved me. So pretty damn good poll by myself, not to pat myself on the back. That Twitter poll was brought to you by March Jewelers.
As you never
I would never do that. Right, I would never do that. For a one-of-a-kind experience that makes diamond buying less stressful, visit the home team at March Jewelers online at marks-jewelers.com. Let's go to Joel in the Northeast. What's going on, Joel?
What's going on, guys? Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you.
Yeah, man. So, listen, right? Like, I get it. First of all, congratulations to Kyle Schwarber. 4 home runs. It's more rare than a perfect game, so congratulations to him. However, it's not – I think I speak for the fans that is – we suffer – it's not that we're entitled. At least I'm not entitled. I understand the ups and downs of the season. I understand that it's not – nothing's guaranteed. However, that still doesn't – We suffer from PTSD. We suffer from PTSD. Earlier in the show, I think in the beginning, you said it was the Mets. It's not just the Mets that we can't beat the Mets. It's that the Arizona series, for me, kind of like broke me in ways. Because we look really, really – I think it's the opposite when you said the Mets series last year was worse than Arizona. I think the Arizona series was. You had all the momentum going into game 3, and then you win one in Arizona. You go come back home for game 6 and 7. You just need to win one. You're up 3-2. You just need to win one game. That's it. And to lose in that fashion, and then in 2024 to lose in that fashion, it's hard for us to get up for a regular. No matter how great the feat is, it's hard. The regular season feat is you hit 4 home runs. I get it. In special, but it's just hard. It's hard to get up for that when you witness what you've witnessed in seasons past.
I will say, Joel,
that's where I'm sorry.
You're absolutely right. I believe that the two losses in Philadelphia in 2023 were two of the most devastating losses in the history of Philadelphia sports.
And absolutely,
everybody I talk to. To this day, anybody who was sort of involved with the Phillies during the unexpected run in 2022, and then the expected run, the expected improvement in 2023,
mm-hmm.
when they came back, and I'll tell you this, I was at every one of those games, right? Every one of them. And it was like the Phillies, if I'm not mistaken, the Phillies weren't really in either of those games, but the momentum that they had coming back from Arizona totally dissipated, and I think the Phillies are still scarred from those two games. I think that I think that has more resonance than the Mets last year, and certainly the Mets, what they've beaten them 9 out of 10 times this year, or something like that, 8 out of 9. But it's absolutely seismic moment in the history of Philadelphia sports, and that may not prove to be true down the line. Like if they win this year or next year or whatever, it may be. But in this moment right now, I think a lot of people feel, what was it, the Tampa? The Eagles lost against Tampa.
Yep.
The Eagles lost against Carolina. I think this is like that kind, that loss, and it will resonate for decades, even if they win two World Series in the next 10 years.
I think you're right.
I mean, like, can I just say this before you guys go?
Sure.
That was the point I just wanted to make. I think we're appreciative of what Kyle is doing with Topper, the management he's doing. It's just I think we suffer from those losses. It still haunts us. So we just – it's not that we're entitled. We just we thought we were so close to winning one, especially given that the Arizona Diamondbacks lost dramatically to the Texans, the Rangers, and we would have smoked the Rangers.
That's where I think it hurts the most. Yep, they could have beat the Rangers that year. And thank you, Joel. I appreciate the call. I think that's where it hurts the most. I think, look, I don't know, but I'm just saying the way both of those teams were playing, I think it would have been an awesome series. I could have seen it go in 6 games, 7 games, but the way the Phillies were playing that year outside of 6 and 7, I thought there was a chance they could have beat the Rangers. But last year was so deflating in a different way. Like the 2024 loss in the NLCS hurt because I thought they could have won it all. Last year, it was such a smack in the face after you win 90-something regular season games. You finally win the division, and then you go out in that manner. It's like two different styles of pain, if that makes sense.
I think 2023 was more of a...
Twenty-three
was more of a kick in the stomach, mm-hmm. because you collapsed in so many areas. The bullpen collapsed. You couldn't get a hit. You couldn't make a play defensively, and the other team was just pretty good. You know, the other team played pretty good baseball and beat you anyway because you had two relievers in Orion Kerkering and Craig Kimbrell that weren't up to the moment. If those guys produced the way that they were supposed to produce, then we're not having this conversation. That was the difference in the series, and they collapsed in 6 and 7.
Do you think this team offensively can consistently string it together through an NLDS, NLCS World Series, or do you feel part of their identity is the high highs, the low lows, and that may be their kryptonite?
You're not going to like this response.
Go ahead. No, it's fine. I'm asking you because I genuinely want to get your opinion on
it. No. I don't think they can if it's the Mets.
You're right. I hate your answer.
It's not that the Mets are that much better a team. It's that they attack the Phillies' bats properly, and they're very disciplined. Like, some teams can play above their level if they execute perfectly, and the Mets are they're not a very disciplined team unless they play the Phillies.
I know. It's crazy. And that pitcher they called up, though, he's nasty. I hate saying, tip your cap to that guy, because they do that too much, but that kid is nasty.
But the sequence of the pitch calling, the pitches to the actual batters, the pitches in the counts, was just spot on.
A guessing game at that point when you're up there and you're just getting fooled. You can't sit on anything. Yeah,
the hitters. But the Mets' attack of the Phillies' hitters has been masterful for, what, a season and a half now. It's just been really, really good.
Do you believe that they have the tells? Because that was sort of the dialogue after the game, is the Mets seem to have a lot of tells on all their relievers, and maybe that's why they're jumping on a Duran and getting 4 hits or
something
along
those lines. No, I'm talking about the flip side. I think their pitchers, the way they attack Philly's hitters, is much more I think it's much more effective and much more devastating than how their hitters attack the Phillies' pitching. If you watch their hitting, they don't really – They swing to contact against the Phillies pitchers. They're very satisfied with putting the barrel of the bat on the ball and letting it go, which is a discipline. And pitching to, you know, Trey Turner a certain way in a certain count. Especially this year, when he's not swinging from his heels, he's very hard to, like, sort of induce into weak contact and strikeouts, but they can do it. And they certainly have Bryce's number. So all that said, they're a much better team. They execute better against the Phillies because I honestly think they get up for the Phillies more than they get up for anybody else.
Well, why can't we get up that way?
Well, again, you're talking about superstars, and I'm going to do it my way, and I'm in look, you don't even get me started about the lack of discipline with the Phillies hitting and some of the selfishness you see sometimes with Phillies hitting.
I want to get into that. I want to.
It just drives me
crazy. We're getting into that.
I mean,
they
play in a bandbox, right? They play in a joke park, and they strike out all the time. It's ridiculous. You don't need to swing hard to hit home runs against 98-mile-an-hour fastballs at a place where the ball carries like it has a kite underneath.
This is the energy I need, Marcus. We're going to get to this. Coming up next, we are going to get into Marcus's frustration with the offense. We're going to rock your calls as well. We are live from Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. There is still time to book your fantasy football party at Chickies and Pete's. Find a location near you at chickiesandpete's.com. It's Broads. It's Marcus Hayes in for the afternoon show on 94 WIP.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.